I know you.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Waveframe Series Film Chat. It's a series where we talk about movies and sometimes about music. I'm your host, Isaac, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Brian.
That's me.
And before we kick off this episode, I want to plug our podcast, Instagram. So we're at Waveframe Pod on Instagram, and you can stay up to date on our episodes, and I post some fun original art. Also, my personal Instagram is ip.boar, and I post art and updates also. As usual, Brian, any plugs?
No plugs.
Great. Awesome. Amazing. Plugs is, I don't know, maybe I should say, like, anything you want to add to that. Plugs is kind of an ugly word, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, yeah.
But today we're talking about the seminal... Wait, what does seminal mean again? I forget.
I don't know.
It sounds important. The seminal 1984 David Lynch directed Dune movie. Yeah. And we're excited to talk about it because we just saw it last week.
I feel like seminal is usually followed by the word masterpiece.
Yeah.
Which is not a word I would use for this movie.
No.
So.
No.
Just seminal.
Yes. Yeah. It's like the movie Nope. Have you seen Nope?
Yeah.
They're like, what's a bad miracle? Like, what's a bad masterpiece? This feels like a bad masterpiece.
Because it was really trying to be a masterpiece.
Yeah.
I wanted that.
And I was just listening to just a small snippet of David Lynch talking about this movie. And the direct quote is, "It was a nightmare."
Correct.
It took 3 years to make this movie. Imagine wasting 3 years of your life on this movie. And you can't back out because that'd be worse than finishing it.
Oh, man.
Oh, God. Sometimes directors, you know, they just get stuck in a movie they hate.
Yeah.
Like David Lynch hates this movie. David Fincher, another David, he rejects completely Alien 3. Because the studio messed with it so much. He's like, I did not direct that movie, even though my name's on it.
Yeah.
And I feel like David Lynch might feel similarly about this, where the studio told him, like, it needs to be under 2.5 hours. So that's why it's like 2 hours and 16 minutes. Yeah.
Oh, man. I didn't hear this myself, but I heard somebody else say that David Lynch said if he just had more time and money. To which, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
No.
Yeah.
Sounds like he had plenty of time.
Because I think the budget was like $40 million, which is a lot for that time.
Yeah.
And I was listening to Red Letter Media talk about this movie and comparing it to the 2021 Dune movie, the part one. Mm-hmm. And they said that Aliens, the movie, had like half the budget, maybe $16 to $20 million. So, and that movie's great. That movie's awesome.
Yeah.
So I think there are just some times where you don't need more time and money. You just, you know, I had a professor in college say, there's good and then there's done. Sometimes you just gotta be done. You gotta be done. Yeah.
Because if you keep adding stuff to it, you're gonna ruin it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Most of my life is trying to be a perfectionist, knowing I'm going to fail, spending too long on something that I don't even care that much about, and, you know, wishy-washy thinking in my head, like, well, maybe I could do it better this way or that way. But if I just had the philosophy, like, there's good and then there's done, I think I would have been a lot better throughout my life.
Yeah.
Like, just getting things done in a... like, I grew up hearing, like, you know, you got to do something with excellence. And sometimes that was paralyzing for me because I was like, well, what if I don't have the time or the resources? Maybe how David Lynch felt. Like, I want to make an excellent movie, but I just can't.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Yeah. That's. I have a friend who got into watercoloring because, like, watercoloring is, like, imperfect because it bleeds and it spreads.
Totally. Definitely.
But she consistently has to catch herself trying to be the first person to ever do watercolor perfect. And then also this sort of like really subversive, like she's trying to perfectly undo perfectionism.
Oh, whoa.
Right. So I get in this loop too where I like, I know I can't do something perfect, but then I try to not do it perfectly.
Yeah.
And it's just so, I just have to give up. Like, I just know whatever I do, I'm even if it's trying to not do it right, I'm still going to try to do it right. And I can't escape it. It's just part of who I am.
Yeah. And, well, that's pretty much like, not to put on my philosopher's hat.
Do it.
M'lady. Put it on. But, but like, once you enter kindergarten, you're kind of getting brainwashed into doing things right for the next 16 years or whatever, how long you're in school for.
Yep.
You know, you just got to do it right.
Yeah.
Like the...
There's one right answer.
The Daft Punk song. Doing it right.
Yeah.
But, so let's quick just say what we're thankful for, because that's a part of the podcast.
Yeah, I wanted to go back.
Yeah. Do you have something off the top of your head, or do you not?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got something. I kind of hate that I'm going to say an Instagram, but there's this Instagram account that I've been following.
Dude, yeah, please.
It's called Early Worm Gets the Bird.
Love it.
And it's these guys that are doing what's called a big year, where they try to see as many birds as they can in a year.
That's great. I love a project. And,
but before they did this, they didn't know anything about birds.
Oh, fun.
So they like studied birds for like a month.
Yeah.
And now they're just on the road in a 2010 Kia.
Oh, nice.
And they look like they're in their like mid-late 20s. They've all got mustaches. They're very hip.
Yeah.
But they're just super funny. Like they crack really good jokes. It's also pretty good actual bird content. Like they're finding cool birds. They know what they're doing.
I love it.
And they're interacting with all of these old birders.
Yeah.
Like these old crotchety people who are like, that's a rusty blackbird.
Yeah. Immediately. They probably don't even need to see it. They just need to hear the call.
They're a little too good. But it's bringing me a lot of joy to follow their journey and their... they're just 3 months in. They started January 1.
Wow.
They're 3 months in, and it's one of the first things I've ever considered giving money to.
Mm.
I haven't yet.
Yeah.
But they
you
have
should.
They have a Patreon where you can give some money that just like helps them get gas and
totally.
Stuff.
Totally. You know? Honestly, I have been benefited in the past by giving money to things. Not a ton of money, but like, you know, it makes me feel better about my life if I'm supporting people doing things that they love.
Yeah.
And so I would encourage people who are listening and you to actually give money to them.
I know.
Yeah. It's a good feeling.
It's good content.
Yeah. That's amazing. Thank you for sharing. I probably will actually check that out because sounds like it's very wholesome.
Oh, I'll send you some clips.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Some good stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Get me hooked. I'm thankful today that I could go with a friend, Jacob Bull, to the Wealthy Theater last night to watch the movie Good Time.
Oh, yeah.
With Robert Pattinson and Benny Safdie. And boy, was it a bummer and a half.
Yeah,
it was awful. Have you seen it?
Uh-huh.
Okay,
sad movie. It's really good.
It's really good.
But it's very Uncut Gems-esque.
Well, it's the same directors.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. He made the same movie twice.
Exactly. You have a keen eye.
I mean, not to spoil the movie, but it's like, it's one of those movies that starts at 11 and just cranks it up.
Yes.
And it just gets worse until the end.
Yeah. I was thinking about it last night and I was like, this is kind of a neon root Shitberg machine. Where like,
what?
Instead of a Root Goldberg machine, like this movie is just one thing after the other, making things worse and worse and worse and worse, and it's all plastered in neon.
Yes.
And it's quite the experience because it feels like it's a chaotic person behind the camera just haphazardly getting something on screen, but it's way more planned out and calculated than you would think on first watch, or like, you're like, where is this going? But it's cleverly edited where it's intentionally disorienting and it's intentionally claustrophobic.
Yeah.
And it's really good. And I did not expect to come out of it thinking to myself, I want to watch this again.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what it is about it, but I wanted to watch it again.
Man, I don't know that I could. Because it has that Breaking Bad type element.
Yeah.
And the same with Uncut Gems, where there are, what kills me about movies and shows like that are there are these moments where they have an opportunity to get out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they can escape the cycle of bad choices.
Yes.
And then they don't. And they go, they get in deeper.
Yes.
And it's just infuriating where it's like, there is no reason
yeah.
for you to continue down this awful cycle other than that you can't handle any stability in your life. And yep. so you just create chaos.
Totally.
And it's, oh, it's hard yeah. to watch.
Like, you think that it's going to be bad and it's definitely worse.
Mm-hmm.
There was times where I was like, putting my hands to my face, covering my eyes, like, what is going on right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a lovely experience last night. And I was just happy I got to see it in theaters. But yeah, today we are talking about 1984's Dune, inspired by Dune Part 2, which is out in theaters right now as of currently audio recording. And it is, let's just, like, it's the same plot as Dune, so you probably know about it, but it has to shove a whole book into 2 hours and 16 minutes
mm-hmm.
instead of having the luxury of two movies.
Yes, shove is the correct word.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And so just very light plot synopsis, Paul Atreides and his father, Duke Leto Atreides or Leto, he and his family and his whole clan have to move to a different planet, and they have to move to the desert planet of Arrakis, and they are sanctioned by the Emperor. This is sounding like I'm quoting the movie
yeah.
1984 Dune,
because
they just spit
exposition
at you. Yeah. Yes, they have to move to a different planet because the Emperor told them to, and it's a good thing and a bad thing because there's more spice, which is the most valuable thing in the whole universe because it allows people to move throughout space. And also, it's like a currency and a drug, all three wrapped in one. And if this is sounding confusing, imagine how David Lynch felt.
Uh-huh.
You know? Yeah. He wanted to be accurate to the book for and to his credit. He
did his best.
Yeah. So a bunch of stuff happens that is bad because they moved. And it's like Game of Thrones in space in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of different factions, a bunch of different families. And the war happens because they are trying to fight back against the Emperor because the Emperors have had power for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That's that.
Yeah.
That's Dune. That's
pretty good. I think that is honestly as good as it gets with Dune.
Yeah.
Like, I just picked up the book, and I have a bookmark where I'm reading, and then I have a bookmark at the end, not almanac.
Mm.
What's the, like, the glossary?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
a glossary of terms at the end of the
oh,
book.
Oh, nice.
And I keep a bookmark there because I flip to it every page.
That's
I
amazing.
I have to look up all these terms.
Yes, yes.
Because it's just this whole, yeah.
Yeah, tell us about your experience of now having seen all of the movies.
Yeah.
Starting to read the book.
I will say, well, first I'll say about the 1984 Dune movie that it is not good, but it is better than I thought it would be.
I agree. My expectations were dirt floor yeah. level low.
It was more watchable.
Yes.
Than I thought it would be.
It's kind of a comedy in some ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is highly entertaining. And yeah, he bit off more than he could chew.
Yep.
And they were trying their best. But it was, if you haven't seen it, it's worth a watch.
Worth one watch.
Worth one watch.
Yeah.
If you're easily grossed out,
yes,
don't watch it.
Don't watch
it. Lots of boils and
yes.
pus and
gross.
Goo, and
yes.
it can be very gross and disturbing.
100%.
But if you can handle that, it's worth it.
Yep.
The book is turning out much better than I thought it would be.
Nice.
I thought it would be just really dense, but they are getting into more good character dialogue stuff.
Yeah.
You'll definitely need the glossary
mm-hmm.
if you haven't seen the movies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I'm reading it after having watched the movies. I don't think
same.
I've ever said that about
yeah, same.
Anything before.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I would be able to read this book if I didn't have the plot already in mind.
Yeah. I have a bunch of friends who read it before even the 2021 Dune movie came out. And they said that the author didn't explain anything. It was pretty dry and they didn't love it. And I'm thinking that I'm having a completely different experience
mm-hmm.
because I've seen both movies, all three movies, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is it is much better that I have something in my head already.
Totally. Yeah.
To fill in the gaps a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of adding an extra layer of like nuance that the movies didn't have.
It's almost like, because I wanted both of the Denis Villeneuve movies to be longer, this is the best thing because I can fill in my imagination with, it's like my own extended edition.
Yeah.
But it's imagination. The only thing I'm running into sometimes is I have to make sure I'm picturing the Denis Villeneuve characters instead of the David Lynch characters, because they're just miles better. They are
very different.
They're very different and way better.
Yeah.
But there will sometimes, like, for example, with the Mentats, there will be details like red lips and red stained teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, ew, gross.
Yeah.
And it'll make me think of the horrible Thufir Hawat of the David Lynch variety, and that guy's gross.
Yeah.
The guy who had to milk the cat in order to get the antidote to the poison.
Why?
I know, and they never went back to the cat milking scene. Exactly.
And knowing that, I think what was so interesting about the David Lynch movie, well, I was really glad we watched it with my friend Kevin Figurski.
That was
and
great.
And he's read the Dune book.
Yes.
I think a couple of times, and so he's well-versed in it. Uh-huh. And it was really nice to be able to ask him, is what we're seeing on the screen in the book?
Mm-hmm.
Because some of it seems so wild that it was like, well, they must be pulling this from the book.
Uh-huh.
And I'd say, no. There is no cat milking in the book. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
If you're thinking they'll be milking cat. And just the question, why? It's already a super dense book. A, why are you adding anything at all? And B, why are you adding the worst things about this movie?
Yeah.
The things you added.
Well, I mean, within the context of David Lynch's filmography, I think you would answer some of the questions. For example, he started off with Eraserhead, which is a weird movie, but people love it so much. We should watch it sometime.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet, but people absolutely adore it. It's a classic. It's really good. And then he made The Elephant Man, which you might have heard of.
I've heard of, yeah.
Yeah, which I think might be Gary Oldman who plays the titular Elephant Man. Okay. But that was a huge...
titular.
Yes, yeah. I know, I was like...
That was nice.
Like, yeah, I sound like a podcast guy.
I love it.
I work for IndieWire.
Yeah.
But...
seminal, majestic, yeah, exactly. Titular character.
Yeah, exactly. But... yeah, so like that was a huge commercial, I think, success and critical success. So then Dino De Lorenzo probably wanted David Lynch to capitalize upon that success and had, this is just all theories, and then had him do this Dune movie, which came out in 84, but he was approached by George Lucas to do Return of the Jedi around 82.
Oh.
And there's a really funny video clip that I could maybe put in this podcast where David Lynch is talking about meeting with George Lucas. And he's like, George showed me these, well, they're called Wookiees. I had a little tiny headache that started. And I like salads, but we went to a restaurant that served only salads. And my headache just kept getting worse and worse. And he just did not have a good meeting with George at all. And he said no to directing Return of the Jedi, which is probably good given this context.
Sure.
But the cool thing about, and if you want to hear way more about this, check out Red Letter Media and their Dune review. But David Lynch pivoted from big blockbuster movies because this was such a disaster.
Yeah,
like it didn't make any money. People hated it even back then.
Yeah,
and he didn't have final cut, which means that he as a director could not have the final say on what the movie was going to be.
No,
the studio did.
Jeez.
So then for the rest of his career, he was like, "I need final cut." So he did like smaller budgets, smaller things. And that makes a world of difference for a director if they can have the final say on what the movie is going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I feel like if I didn't have final say in what it was going to be, I wouldn't take any risks
exactly
on scenes I might not want.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wouldn't want the studio to put them in if they suck.
Exactly. So then there's that tension.
I would only film stuff I was sure I wanted.
Yes. Yes.
And that would, yeah.
But then the studio can say, well, take that out, you know?
Right.
And so even if you only like film scenes you want,
yeah,
it could be a crap show anyway.
I feel like I'd have to mislead them with lots of terrible scenes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so they leave in the stuff that I want. Yeah.
Well, for... I think I said this before, but for Babylon, Damien Chazelle said that he could only have that crazy ending because he had a bad ending before, and it just happened to be on accident, but I'm sure some directors do that on purpose.
Yeah, oh yeah.
They're like, okay, I want a good ending, so then I'll give them this horrible ending.
Yeah.
And we have like 3 weeks left, so...
There's Mike Birbiglia talks about doing an award show and how the... director of the award show afterwards said she should have had him submit his jokes ahead of time.
Yes.
He's like, that wouldn't have worked. I would have sent you decoy jokes.
Yeah.
I would have sent you fake jokes so that I could do whatever I want.
That's amazing.
Yep.
Is that the show where he goes off on David O. Russell?
Yes.
That's a great one. Is it Thank God for Jokes?
Yeah, Thank God for Jokes.
That's a wonderful, wonderful hour special.
It's really good.
But this movie is full of... I don't know, like, when you think of this movie, what comes to mind?
Because
I think of people thinking in their heads out loud.
Yeah, I think of several things.
Yeah.
I think of the whispering.
Yes.
Which is how they enacted
the inner monologues.
People thinking in their minds. Yeah.
People just staring at each other.
Which now reading the book, I get.
Yes.
Because that goes on throughout the book, but just the whispering.
Yeah.
And it's unnecessary. It doesn't add much.
Yes.
And it's hard because then they're just staring at each other.
Yes, it's awful.
They're thinking in their heads.
The desert planet Arrakis.
Yes.
You know.
And the very boxy
shields. Word. Yes, so bad.
And they have the fight scene where they have their full body shields on. And it's just very clear that either the technology is not ready for this movie.
Uh-huh.
Or they just didn't have the time to do it well because it looks like Minecraft.
And they changed the audio. It looks like Minecraft or Roblox or Legos or something. You're so right. It's so blocky.
Yeah.
I mean, look it up on YouTube, those of you listening who haven't seen it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And then they changed the audio to make it sound like they're inside shield. So then Patrick Stewart is saying like, it's the slow blade that penetrates the shield. Yeah. And you're like, what? What did you say? And then you kind of never see the shields again.
They never do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think of a lot of bad choices is the first thing.
You can't tell if they're attacking or defending or if they're just lobbing themselves over some enemies.
Yeah.
Oh, you do see it just a tiny bit in the attack where the Harkonnens attack Arrakis.
And then... the thing that I think made me the most angry was they called it the weirding way.
Yes.
But it's essentially a combination of this voice thing they wear on their throat and then a little square gun.
Yeah, yes.
And if you say magical words, it shoots lasers. And they have to say, like, ka-cha!
Exactly.
It shoots a laser. And it's called the weirding way.
Yes.
And which I think the weirding way is in the book, but it has nothing to do with laser guns.
Yeah, the Bene Gesserit are the weirder. I think it's taken from like the Weird Sisters. Like I think in the Shakespeare play Macbeth, there's the three witches who might be referenced as like weird.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so then sometimes it's spelled with a Y.
Yeah.
Somebody should fact check me on this, but I do think that there, or maybe I'm thinking of, the Y might not be true, but yeah, I think like witches and weird sometimes go together.
Yeah. Well, it was just such a horrible...
horrible.
Choice.
And they would use his name, Muad'Dib.
Yeah.
They'd be like, Muad'Dib.
Deep. And then shoot a laser.
Like big cardboard box guns
that
looked awful.
And when he realizes that his name can be used to shoot a gun, he whispers, my name is so powerful.
Yeah.
Or something
my
like that.
My name is a weapon.
My name is a weapon.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so creepy.
Maybe I would want to see this again. With a glass of whiskey or something.
Yeah, what a ride.
I do think that there's a lot to be loved about this movie. Some positives are the production design. I think that each place is really different and unique. There's the inside of the Arrakis where like the Atreides are staying, very detailed, very ornate. And then there's a lot of cool establishing shots with like ships that look really good. There's a corridor crew. Go on YouTube, type in corridor crew Dune. Mm-hmm. And there's a really awesome breakdown of 1984's special effects and how they tell you how it's done. And it's really great. And it helps you appreciate how there are some parts of this movie that are... They also talk about the boxy shields.
Yeah.
And they talk about how bad those are. But there are some parts of this movie that have a lot of artistry, a lot of effort.
Yeah.
And they use their budget well in some ways.
Yeah. The sets were really cool.
Yeah,
except
definitely.
For... Gady Prime.
Gady Prime was lacking. It looked like a warehouse with no... Like a building inside of a warehouse with no roof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just kind of a...
And then whenever they were on the sandworms, like standing on them, it was so awkward when they were using their guns. And then you would just see them shoot and then you'd see what they're hitting. Nothing in between.
Yeah.
And it just felt like rudimentary filmmaking.
And it was way too easy to get on the sandworm.
Oh my word.
Just climbing a ladder.
Yes, especially in contrast with what the new ones are like.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very impressive.
Like Denis Villeneuve said that he wanted everyone to treat the movies like a documentary where what would actually happen in that world.
Yeah.
And so the sounds and the special effects, everything's supposed to feel natural and real and organic and lived in. And so they found like reference footage for people getting on things. So for example, like a surfer in a wave or somebody trying to, like they would find something that's a close real world equivalent and then make it as real as they can feel when Timothy Chalamet is trying to get on the worm.
Yeah.
And also something that people do when it comes to filmmaking is they use cameras in ways that could actually be done in the real world. So if you have a CGI shot, your camera can go anywhere, right?
Yeah.
But something that even animated movies do sometimes is like you can trick the audience's brain into thinking something looks more realistic if you can keep the camera like where a human could hold it.
Yeah.
Or like feasibly we've seen it before like on the side of like a moving car or something.
Yeah.
So the difference between like Pacific Rim 1 and Pacific Rim 2 is huge because the director of Pacific Rim 1, Guillermo del Toro, he would have the camera like...
Oh, God.
That's your bird clock.
Oh, God.
You're obsessed with birds.
There's so much to say about what just happened. That's still happening. It's still going on.
I think my grandma had a bird clock when I was young. But anyway, we're going to keep that in.
You keep going.
But so anyway, what I'm trying to say is Denis Villeneuve used those tactics of putting the camera where like somebody could actually hold it so that your brain is like, oh my word, this is so visceral, this is so real, instead of this CGI where the camera can go anywhere. It can go 1,000 feet up. It can go into space. It can go anywhere. But like Christopher Nolan in Interstellar, he straps a camera to the side of a spaceship so that you feel like you're watching like a real space shuttle from the 80s because that's the cameras that we're used to seeing there.
Yeah.
So if you use your camera in a way where it's like grounded in quote unquote reality, you can trick the audience into thinking this is more realistic.
That's interesting because they're one of my least favorite things in a movie is when I feel like I'm taken out of it.
Yeah.
And I think... I don't know that I've recognized that as one of the things that can take me out of a movie.
It's subtle if you're not looking for it. And I had other people point it out to me. So that's why I know about it.
Yeah. But there are some times where it's very obvious why
I'm
taken out of the movie because it's just like a hard left.
Yeah.
But there are other times where I feel like I've just been taken out of it and I can't quite identify why. And I think that might be one of the things when it's just too much of a leap for my brain to make.
Yeah.
From what I could experience visually.
Totally.
To something totally different. That's fascinating.
Well, it's weird because this movie has so much of both. Like, I'm taken out of it because I'm not used to hearing people's thoughts.
Yeah.
I'm taken out of it because it's a bad green screen in the background.
Yeah.
I'm taken out of it because it's so much exposition and people don't talk like that.
There's no way their hair would look that way.
No, exactly. After
what they've just been through.
Yes, it doesn't feel like a real lived-in world as much as the new ones do. Mm-hmm. But then there are times where, you know, somebody is acting really strange. And I actually thought that Vladimir Baron Harkonnen did a great job acting.
Yeah.
He was believable. Yeah.
He was chaotic and unsettling.
I thought Patrick Stewart did a bad job. Like, I'm sorry. Yep. But
his heart wasn't in it.
No. And like, you ironically missed the part where he was holding a pug and ran into battle because you were walking two dogs.
I did miss that section. Yes. Yeah.
But and then there's like sets that look very realistic for the time. Mm-hmm. So it's a big mixed bag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They missed in a lot of places, and then other places there were surprising hits.
Yeah.
There was multiple moments where we were watching it where I think you would say out loud, you're like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
But also with the tone of surprise.
Yes.
Oh, there's something good.
Yeah, exactly.
That's surprising.
Yes.
Yeah, they did a good job.
And our friend Hannah, she had never seen any Dune movies and never read the books. Mm-hmm. So this was her literal first time.
Yeah.
And that
watching
was
her experience,
crazy.
It was fun.
Yeah, very fun.
With no context.
Because she was saying a lot of like, what? You know? Yeah. How is this?
And I feel the same, but for different reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
I know what it should have been.
She picked up on a lot.
Yeah.
Because the movie, if you're paying attention, you have to like pretend you're in a lecture where you have to like take notes.
Yeah.
It's like somebody is a bad professor and just lecturing you about like, here's the four planets, Giddy Prime, Arrakis and Kaladin, and the Emperor's one that I can't remember ever.
I think it helps knowing that this movie came out well after Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I don't know if I can't get into something because it's bad or just because it's old.
Yeah.
And I'm used to better production value and things
like
that.
I think that's fair.
And I think that was part of this movie, but also knowing that there was good sci-fi that holds up many years before this came out helps put it in context of
totally.
Oh no, it's also not very well done.
Yeah.
It's not just me not being able to handle old stuff.
I think there are words like timeless or a classic for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Because some stories really do stand the test of time. And I don't think it's bad to think that an old movie is bad or like I just can't get into it because I think it's just like the evolution of storytelling, especially when it comes to film, is so drastic, like a 1950 movie compared to now.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is there's bad movies now and bad movies then.
Yep.
So then we just happen to watch a bad movie then.
Yep.
But it's a testament to like just plain old good storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
When you compare 1977 Star Wars versus 1984's Dune, it's just good storytelling
just
versus not so good storytelling.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of reasons for that, but I think there's less characters in 1977 Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
There's better special effects by far.
Yeah.
There's like a slower pace, especially in the second half.
Yeah.
Or at least an editing and a pace that makes more sense. It's just a simpler.
Yeah.
Less exposition. It's a simpler story. And they were intentionally taking the modern myth of Joseph Campbell's Hero of a Thousand Faces.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really a science fiction movie. It's a fantasy movie where Luke is just like a million other heroes.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you have the circle of... mm-hmm. of getting to the unknown. Leave home, and, yeah, exactly.
Find the wise teacher.
Exactly.
Trials and tribulations.
So it makes sense why that's a better movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it made a bunch of money. It stood the test of time. And whenever it's re-released, it makes even more money.
Yeah.
Whereas this movie, 1984 Dune, was re-released into theater recently, into theaters. And I'm very curious at how much money it made, because I have no idea.
I feel like the curiosity aspect probably
yeah.
got a lot of people to go.
Totally.
Yeah.
Or David Lynch fans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of pacing, I never really considered pacing all that much before, but I've been watching it now.
Yeah.
And with this movie, it was the wildest left turn from way too slow to yes. way too fast.
Yeah.
Like, you can almost... I can feel the director in the movie running out of time and budget.
Yes.
I can yes. feel his panic in making the movie in the movie.
Totally.
Because it speeds up so quickly. And I felt that a little bit in the most recent movie, Dune 2.
I agree.
At the end of the movie, it feels like it really picked up pace. And maybe that's how the book is written. Maybe there's just less there, but...
We'll find out.
Yeah. It felt really fast, but I was watching the Netflix show, Three Body Problem.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
Worth a watch.
Okay, cool.
That was pretty good. Nice. But I was really watching the pacing, because a lot of different episodes have different pacing.
And mm-hmm.
I've never really paid attention to it before, so it's just really interesting. But this was an exercise in chaotic pacing.
Yeah. And it's interesting that the pacing gets so rapid right when the first Dune movie that Timothée Chalamet is in ends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right when they meet the Fremen and they're up in the rocks
yeah.
is when this movie, 1984, has to go into overdrive.
Yeah.
Of like, okay, he's a leader. Okay, they have to fight. Okay,
Yeah, there is no question about whether he is the Messiah to nope. them. He becomes their Messiah immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, to your point in Dune 2, you wanted more of the Fremen life and their like ways and getting to just experience what their culture is. Mm-hmm. There's none of that in yeah. this one. It's just like they're a militia.
Yeah.
And they're, fighting and getting ready. They're like cutting stones and using those weird guns, and you yeah. know, it's like kind of bad charming, but it's not believable at no. all.
It's just Paul Atreides finds an army.
Yeah.
There's yeah. no, you don't really know anything about them. It's not about them ever.
Yeah, it's not it's nuanced. Just... And something that I hated in this movie is that it's just a bunch of white guys.
Yep.
Like, I think that it's way more textured and, like, you can feel the lived-in reality and culture of the new ones because they're of a different race.
Mm-hmm.
And their accents are different. And they're not just, like, all looking like they're from Norway, you know? Yeah.
And you feel how much grosser it is that this white guy comes in.
Totally.
And takes over.
Yes.
And you yeah. feel the sort of ick of that.
Yes.
A little bit more fully.
Definitely. It has a lot of real world parallels uh-huh. compared to the 1984 one. You're like, okay, this is some guy playing D&D with a movie. I don't yeah. know. You know. It's
yeah. That's gross.
So, man. I thought like, the fact that you can contrast and compare both of these is almost like you're taking a 101 filmmaking course.
Mm-hmm.
Pacing, special effects, storytelling in general, avoiding exposition, good acting, you know, like yeah. all of these things. The way you present a world
yeah.
makes the world of a difference.
I do. That is interesting. I really like that. We do get the same story in three different containers.
Yeah.
Two separate movies
yeah.
and a book. Because it is a really good story, and I think a story worth telling.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really fascinating to see how these three different approaches to telling the same story all happen.
I'm just imagining somebody who read the book, watched the 1984 movie, and now everyone's obsessed with Dune.
Yeah.
They're probably like, oh, I'm so sick of hearing about Dune. All these bandwagon fans.
Yeah.
And like, that's what I am. But no, I don't care. I don't care. Yeah. It's awesome.
Well, and
I'm late to the party, okay?
The same thing happened with the newer Star Trek movies.
Oh, yeah.
Which
yeah.
are not great, but pretty good.
Yeah.
And a lot of old school Trekkies were pissed.
Yeah.
But essentially their argument was like, sucks that these are good.
Well, I mean,
remember when it was bad and we still liked it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you want to feel validated for sticking it through the gross bad times.
Yeah,
the hard times.
I liked it before it was cool.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I liked it when it was Star Trek Nemesis.
Yeah,
and Tom Hardy was a clone of Patrick Stewart, and it was bad. I went to the theater and watched it out of obligation.
Yep.
Yeah, it's. It's hard, but I just think gatekeeping doesn't help anybody.
Yep.
So
fandom is a funny thing.
It is a funny thing. And with podcasts, you could just not listen to this episode. Like, right. If you're listening to this episode and you're annoyed that we're still talking about Dune, this is on you, buddy. Like, you clicked on this. It's not on me, okay?
We're going to do a whole one on the book next.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, why not? We can do whatever we want.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, and funny. I would just like to say that I felt bad that I've been slowly reading through the book. Like, I'm still only, like, 150 pages in. Mm-hmm. But, okay, I'm a slow reader. Sue me. I don't care. Like, I prioritize watching TV shows with my wife sometimes instead of reading a book or watching YouTube. And that's okay for me right now. But it's also okay for me to be like, okay, I'd like to read more. This is a great book. And I am really enjoying it.
Yeah.
But how about you? When it comes to reading, are you happy and satisfied with your type of reading, style of reading?
Gosh, I'm so inconsistent. I'll go through phases where I'll just devour books. I'll read three at a time.
Wow, nice.
And I love it.
Yeah.
And then I'll have other seasons where I read one book in 6 months.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think I used to want to read more because for whatever reason, we've decided that people who read are better than people that don't.
It's a moral thing now.
Yeah.
Or it's a prestige moral, thing.
Or prestige, or we just think they're better.
Yeah.
And I do think reading's good.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Reading is good.
And I do think it's healthier for my brain than the amount of TV that I watch. But at the same time, I just kind of follow where the energy is. And if it's with reading, I do that. And if it's not, I take a break.
I think that's great.
It's fine.
I try not to judge my habits unless they're negatively affecting me, and then I just try to change them.
Yeah. Like, how's that work?
Well, it's really difficult.
Yeah.
But it's doable.
Yeah.
Because, like, for example, something I've learned is that when you change your environment, you can use that as an opportunity to change a habit.
Mm.
So I used to go to bed and have my phone as an alarm. But once I moved to Holland and I lived in my apartment, I vowed to never have my phone next to my bed before I go to bed.
Interesting.
And I've never done that once.
Hmm.
So I charge it three rooms away.
Yeah.
And I go on it technically before I go to bed, but I'm not in bed on my phone.
Yeah.
So the only thing I can do is listen to something in my headphones, which connect Bluetooth three rooms away.
Yeah.
But then I don't want something with ads. And so I usually just listen to something that's like better, like an audiobook or maybe like a commentary, like a movie commentary by like Red Letter Media,
because
they don't have ads. So I can pause it, do the volume up and down, and that's it. Or I can read a book. And I've been reading Dune like before bed, but sometimes when I read Dune before bed, I have to read a paragraph over and over because my brain is like getting tired.
Yeah, it's not a great pre-bed book.
No, I mean, it's kind of good because it'll make you sleepy,
but
it's also like, oh crap, I have to pay attention really hard.
Yep.
Yeah.
When it comes to the habit change, I have to, with me, I can't force it.
Mm.
I don't know why. I've never had that thing in me that's like I can just change my behavior when I want to.
Yeah.
I have a difference between wanting something and wanting to want things.
Oh yeah.
And usually if I can't change a habit that I want to, it's because I don't really want to yet.
Oh.
I want to change that.
Yeah.
It's sort of like when I think about New Year's resolutions and why they don't work for lots of people. It's because they don't really want to do that yet. They want to.
Yeah.
Like in the states of change model, if you know anything about that, they're what we call contemplation.
Okay.
Which is they're thinking about changing, but they're not ready to change yet. They haven't moved into the next stage, which is preparation.
Okay.
And for me, if I try to change something and I'm really struggling with it, I then have to go back and identify, okay, why don't I actually want to change this thing?
Yeah.
I want to.
Yes.
But I don't actually want to yet, because if I wanted to, I would just do it. And I find that usually if I wait some time and sit with it, down the line, it becomes really easy to change that habit.
Yeah.
If I stop trying to force it.
Yeah.
Like for years I wanted to exercise, but the truth is I didn't want to. I just wanted to want to.
Yes.
And it was because I wanted to exercise for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And then a few years down the line, I'm, you know, matured and wanted to do it for better reasons. And now it's really easy.
I love that. And this sounds, I almost said I love that for you.
Yeah, I don't think I'm like everybody.
No.
Don't get me wrong.
No, but for me, it's almost the opposite, where I wanted to do things for the right reasons. Like I wanted to exercise for the right reasons.
Yeah.
But those right reasons just weren't coming. So then I started exercising, and then afterward I was like, now I want to, for the right reasons, because I've felt the results and the effects of, like, it makes me feel better.
Yeah.
I like, you know, it makes me sleep better. Like, I like myself a little bit better when I exercise more, and just stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so now I want it for the right reasons, and I can build upon that.
Yeah. I do think sometimes you can reverse engineer it.
Yeah.
Right. Of acting out of character almost.
Yeah.
To sort of shift your character.
Yeah. But I do know what you're saying, where, like, I want to be the type of person who wants to read all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But part of that is the, like, cultural credibility you get.
Yep.
You get some clout when you're, like, known as a reader, which is so weird.
Yeah.
But it's also, like, really great to read. So I'm slowly becoming the type of person where I, like, want to go to bed at 10 instead of midnight. And sometimes I do it, sometimes I don't. But I'm doing it way more now because, yeah, I'm being more real with myself. I'm being the type of person where I'm, like, I'm slowly becoming more of, like, what I viewed as an adult when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm becoming slowly more like my dad or my mom, where they just get up early. That's what they do.
Yeah.
You know, and I just associated that with being responsible and being, like, a good person.
No.
Which is not fair and not true, but now I understand better why they did that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you want to exercise, or if you want time by yourself, both things that I like a lot, you maybe should do it in the morning before everybody else wakes up, because then people aren't, like, around you talking to you, and then you get it out of the way and you can do other things in your day.
Yeah.
So I, like, see the reasoning for the right reasons instead of, like, the, this is just what you do. I'm doing it for the right reasons instead of the wrong reasons.
Yeah. I sometimes need necessity, like what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Of, like, I'm assuming, once you have kids, if you want time alone, you gotta get up before them, right? It just necessitates it.
Yeah.
That's for me. If I want to do, I thought I wanted to run. I don't ever. Never want to run again. But I thought I wanted to run, but the only way I could get myself to do it was to sign up for a race.
Yeah.
I had to create
the urgency
to do it. Yep.
And for me, it's like, I thought I wanted to go to the gym, but really, right now, I don't want to go to the gym.
Mm-mm.
I just want to be outside. Yeah. So I'm like, all right, I need to just exercise outside now.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I have opportunities to do that.
Yeah.
And if you like exercising, or let's say you don't like exercising, just try to figure out, like, what you do like to do. Like, maybe it's as simple as walking, or, like, birding, or, you know, maybe you like to watch Friends on a treadmill. Like, none of that is bad.
Yeah.
Just do the exercise that you like.
Yeah.
That's it.
For me, it's, I like watching TV. So I work out in my living room and I watch TV.
Yeah.
If I couldn't watch TV while I exercise, I would hate it. I would absolutely hate it.
I listen to podcasts and music all the time when I'm outside.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yep.
Yeah. Just, like,
pair it with something.
Exactly. Like, I listen to books on audiobooks while I'm exercising, and that elevates my exercising and listening to a book.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody's going through, if I'm listening to Dune, and like somebody has to do something difficult and persevere, then, and I'm walking up the steps of Mount Pisgah, I'm like, I'm just like this character. I'm just like Paul Atreides right now. I'm at the dune.
You start sand walking.
Yes, exactly. Dude,
I get the rhythms.
I do think that this summer I'd love to enfold you into what Anna and I like to call experiential media consumption. We need a better name than that.
Yeah. But
for example, like, if you want to watch Castaway, you could try fasting for a whole day and then watching Castaway, and then right afterward, like, eating something delicious. So you feel like how he feels when he gets back to the mainland.
You're making the movie 4D.
Exactly. Yeah. In a fun, good way. Or, you know, you could watch Forrest Gump and also run like 5 miles or something, so you could feel like he feels, you know. Or you could watch Dune, and I don't know, you got to make sure you're healthy with this, so I'm not going to, don't do anything you don't want to do, but I guess you could like experience something really hot in sand.
Yeah.
And then drink water.
Take over a small country.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I just love stuff like that, and I want to do more of that this summer. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say LARPing.
Well, that's kind of what
it is. It's close.
It's close. Besides, we could dress up like characters.
Yep.
You know what? I wish I was the type of person who LARPed more often.
I want to do it once.
I want to have a goth party where everyone can show up in black.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, have all the makeup and all the, like, metal, you know, on them or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that'd be fun.
Is that?
Is that inappropriate? I don't know. I said inappropriate.
Nah,
you said appropriate.
Fine.
But like, it's
a fashion choice.
Yeah, it's fashionable. Yeah.
That's not tied to a marginalized culture.
Exactly. And a lot of my friends, they don't just like post things on social media.
Right.
I love that about my friends.
Yeah.
They're not just going to take a picture and post it to social media. Yeah, it's not 2008 anymore. You know, I mean, maybe some people live that way, but I don't. Anyway, the 1984 Dune is kind of boring in some ways. So we haven't been talking about it for like 20 minutes. And I think that's okay.
Yeah. I feel like we covered
the
thoughts on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel so free when I think to myself, like, this podcast can be about anything.
That's right.
Like, we can title it 1984 Dune and talk about it for 5 minutes, and technically, that's fine.
Yeah.
And not even technically. It doesn't even matter. Nothing matters when you don't get paid for a podcast that you make with your friend.
Exactly.
And it's free for everyone, so no one can complain.
No.
But if you wanted to complain, I guess you could.
I would love that.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be awesome.
I don't feel complaints about this.
But yeah. Check out our previous episode. I did it with Luke on Sleep Token, which is we did it on an album called Take Me Back to Eden. Great album, great episode, great person. And check out 1984 Dune. Check out other of David Lynch movies.
Yeah.
If you want one on Disney Plus that's more normal and really good compared to other David Lynch movies, it's more normal. Check out The Straight Story. It has nothing to do with LGBTQ plus people. It's just about a guy, like a grandfather type person, who rides his lawnmower, because he doesn't have a car, over to his brother. And so he like goes across the country on a lawnmower, like a riding lawnmower.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful story. It's a wonderful American heartfelt story.
That's awesome.
And the actor who played the main character, I think that might have been one of his last movies. He died right afterward. Mm. And he gives an amazing performance. Nice. So check out The Straight Story. It's a 90s movie that is full of heart.
Nice.
Yeah.
David Lynch redeemed himself.
Oh, yeah. In spades.
Came back strong.
Yes.
Yeah.
Film bugs, film buffs. I need to figure out the right term for these people. Film enthusiasts. They love David Lynch, and for good reason. I got to check out Blue Velvet sometime. That has changed a lot of people. Paul Giamatti was talking about how that inspired him to be an actor.
Hmm.
Watching awesome. Blue Velvet.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.